Nicolet Bank is honored to support all who strive to make communities great. Newsmakers is a production of Wisconsin Eye. To keep programs like this free and accessible to all, please consider a charitable gift to wisi.org/donate or text WISI to 44321. This program is brought to you from Wisconsin Eye's Margaret Farrow Studio.
Hello and welcome to Newsmakers. I'm your host, Lisa Pugh. The Assembly's new Committee on Government Oversight, Accountability, and Transparency, or GOAT, held its first hearing last month, focusing on issues like state employment, telework, and cybersecurity. But what's next for the committee's agenda? We hope to find out today, talking with the committee chair, Representative Amanda Nedweski, and minority ranking member, Representative Mike Baer. Thank you both for joining us.
You're welcome.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
So Speaker Voss was on this show back in December, and he announced the creation of this committee, and he announced you as chair. Why did you want to chair this committee?
So my private sector background comes from corporate finance. So I worked in financial planning and analysis for a major manufacturer in Southeast Wisconsin as a global analyst for the CFO's group, and it's in my experience and in my nature to want to explore ways to save money and gain efficiencies in business, so I wanted to bring that to state government when I ran in 2022, and this was a perfect opportunity to flex those skills.
How do you describe the charge of this committee?
The charge of the committee is just in the title, you know, operations, oversight, accountability, transparency, ways to find, you know, better ways to use resources in government than we're using them now. Efficiencies, increase productivity, and make wiser choices on behalf of the taxpayer.
Representative Baer, do you hear concerns from constituents about waste, fraud, and abuse in state government?
Sure. And I have a district that has a pretty high percent of state workers who live there. And so there are always concerns, and I think we should always be mindful of we are the ones charged with spending and overseeing taxpayer dollars. So we do have to be very careful that those are being spent in a way that everyone is proud of and accepting of.
So you agree the committee has the potential to uncover some inefficiencies in state government?
Sure. I think this is the words, as the chair said, of the committee of government operations, accountability, transparency. Those are good words and things that fit into a progressive mindset, and we have a strong history of that in this state. And you know, we're public officials. We should be open to scrutiny anytime. Come to my office and dig through the drawers. I mean, this is how it should work in state government.
Representative Nedweski, what's an example of a concern you hear from your constituents around, you know, state government waste, fraud, and abuse?
Oh, all kinds. So the suggestions are coming in on the daily, whether it has to do with spending on school funding, the university system, how we're funding road construction. We certainly had a lot of feedback when we introduced the return to work bill and why aren't people back working in person. Looking at inefficiencies in local government and county government and how we can help them. So it's the list is endless.
This committee has been compared to the federal DOGE committee created by President Trump and headed up by Elon Musk. Do you agree with that comparison, or how are the committees different?
The committees are significantly different in that the GOAT committee is not DOGE, because DOGE is in the executive branch and GOAT is in the legislative branch.
So clearly their powers are different.
Very different. And certainly in the legislature, we have the inherent power of oversight that's granted to the legislative branch and the Constitution. But we cannot bulldoze our way through the state agencies and make all kinds of changes the way that maybe DOGE has appeared to have been doing perceived by some people as doing. But we in order for us to be successful, not only do we have to have, you know, bipartisan efforts, we also have to partner with the executive branch. We're not going to get anything done or find any success unless we're willing to work together.
Republican legislatures and governors in other states have been creating DOGE-like committees and task forces. How are Democrats generally responding to that?
Well, I think we're somewhat different from most other states, and we are a split government. We've got Republican control in the Assembly and Senate and a Democratic governor. So I think that does create some conflict and some questioning of one side of the other, which is justified and makes sense given the political world that we're in. But again, back to the words of this committee, these are things that make sense to be investigating and have a commitment to accountability and transparency. I think the question is, what are those things going to be? And I appreciate the commitment from the chair of doing some things that are bipartisan. That's not what we've seen yet, but looking forward to those days coming soon, hopefully.
Staying on the topic of DOGE just for a little bit, the most recent Marquette poll that was released last week talks about the approval rate of Elon Musk and the efforts of that DOGE committee. The poll said that the approval of the DOGE action stand at 41% with disapproval at 58%. What are your thoughts on what DOGE has done so far at the federal level in terms of finding efficiencies in the federal government? Do you have an opinion on that?
I'm certainly no expert on DOGE's accomplishments. I mean, I think that the uncovering of fraud has been very popular with people, maybe not the committee's or the group's activities overall, and maybe their approach. But when we talk about the number of fraudulent Social Security numbers that they've uncovered, or the number of people who are fraudulently collecting benefits through Medicaid or Medicare, that benefits us all when we remove fraud. And to date, you know, I know people are very concerned about their Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid, but there haven't been any cuts yet to people's payments or benefits. What has been cut are maybe excess employees that aren't providing a contribution, or maybe the spending on the fraudulently distributed funds.
I know some of the actions of DOGE, including canceling federal grants, some pretty big cuts to some of the federal workforce. What is your reaction to what DOGE has been up to?
I think we've seen those cuts hit our community pretty strong at the VA, at UW doing its research, and certainly across our state. And so I'm deeply concerned at this sort of chainsaw approach, or bulldozer approach, as my colleague just called it. You know, there's the scalpel approach would probably be more productive and more looking at things that really need to be looked at rather than just sort of clear-cutting whatever's in front that doesn't make sense. Just because it doesn't make sense doesn't mean it's not worthwhile. And I think there aren't enough questions being asked by this particular body, and people are suffering as a result of it.
There were some pretty big gatherings across Wisconsin and the nation over this last weekend protesting some of these actions by DOGE and Elon Musk. Were you surprised by those gatherings and kind of their theme? Or is that to be expected?
What I heard was people were gathering because they wanted the federal government to take their hands off Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. And so far, there haven't been any cuts. So I guess I'm kind of confused as to why all the hubbub.
You think the message, that wasn't the right message?
Their message isn't clear at all. That so far, people have, I mean, there have been cuts in federal workforce, but is it impacting the consumer and the people who are receiving the services of the federal government? That has remains to be seen what the measurement is of that. And I think that, you know, what we are trying to avoid here in Madison and on our committee is, I really don't want to waste time on things that cause controversy. I want to take the time that we're using together to be productive, because that's a goal of the committee, is productivity and efficiency, and find places where we have common ground where we can actually get something done. And, you know, I need Representative Bear and his colleagues on the other side of the aisle. If we come up with recommendations, I need them to be able to, you know, be an advocate for us in the East Wing, you know. And you know, the protests and things, people certainly have the right to do that. I just think it lacks focus.
Do you agree that if the DOGE efforts are successful at the federal level, that it will push down more responsibility to state governments in areas potentially like, for instance, the Department of Education or in areas of public health?
Yeah, of course it will flow downhill to us. We're the next level of government below the federal government. And I think just because Congress hasn't passed any bills that make cuts doesn't mean that people haven't felt at least anxiety, concern, or some direct impacts of cuts that have happened to the workforce at the federal level or changes in rules. I've heard constituents who are very concerned about this, and I think those protests are a strong indication of that. I had three listening sessions on Saturday where people were very concerned, and the results in our election last week show deep distrust and concern about Elon Musk and what he's doing on behalf of Donald Trump. These are very real threats.
As we mentioned at the top of the show, your committee recently had its first hearing. You were focusing on telework policies, cybersecurity policies. What was your biggest takeaway from your hearing?
The biggest takeaway for me, so we invited the top five agencies that had the most teleworkers at the time of the 2023 Legislative Audit Bureau audit of telework, space management, and risk management. And I had hoped to hear the agencies give us more information about how they're measuring the productivity of teleworkers. And what I really heard was, well, we're kind of monitoring performance, but we're not measuring productivity. And the bill, you know, on return to work requires everyone to come back to work on July 1st.
This is a bill that you've introduced with Senator Tomczyk.
Mm-hmm. And the bill is simple for a reason. It's because truly the legislature should not be doing this. This is not our role. This should be coming from the executive branch. There should be some accountability being placed on teleworkers. And that's not to say that people who are working remotely aren't productive. It's that 5 years ago, everyone went home because of COVID, and there hasn't been a report back that overall the agencies have done a really great job at figuring out since then who is really productive working remotely, who works better maybe in a hybrid schedule, and who really probably works better under maybe a full-time supervision situation.
Were you surprised by that in your hearing, that the state agencies hadn't developed more of an accountability?
They've had 5 years. So I guess I was surprised. I mean, I believe, you know, DSPS, the Department of Safety and Professional Services, they had some systems in place for using remote work as an incentive and monitoring that remote work. And if, you know, if it wasn't working out, bringing people back maybe full or part of the time. I was impressed by their system. I know that there's always room for improvement. But I was disappointed that mostly the agencies kind of wanted us to accept that this is the new normal, and we shouldn't have to evaluate productivity, particularly in the way that space management has been addressed. I mean, DPI had only about 5% of employees working in person at the time of the audit. Now, as a caveat, they were in the process of moving at the same time, so I'm not sure if that's super accurate in terms of that particular given point in time, but that's what the audit reported.
And they said they've realized some significant savings through that reduction of their footprint.
Right. So, you know, they reduced their square footage by, you know, selling their building and moving some people over to the Thompson Center. But at the same time, if you've never performed any kind of evaluation of your teleworkers, how do you know that some of those people don't really do better in person? And also, what some of the questions we asked in the committee were, how do you measure the loss from in-person intangibles like collaboration, creativity, mentorship, professional development, training, innovation? And most of the committees or the agencies weren't able to really answer that question.
Representative Baer, do you share those same concerns? Was that your takeaway from the hearing?
No, I think the main takeaway was that the one-size-fits-all bill that that Representative Nedweski has introduced won't work going forward. Remote work is a success that was born out of a crisis, and our administration and secretaries and the managers have made it something that works, and they're doing annual reviews in a number of places, and the one-size-fits-all wouldn't allow for even the DSPS example that was given Department of Safety and Public Service, wouldn't give the opportunity for them to treat this as an incentive. They would require all workers just to come back. So trying to do a one-size-fits-all doesn't seem to be something that would work for our state government at this point. And when we would fall behind the private market and all those workers who are now spread across the state, across districts that don't look like mine, close to Madison, would have to move to somewhere closer to an office. And I think that would be a detriment to our state government.
There was a hearing on your bill last week. I saw that you testified on that. There was one expert who came to the hearing, and he said a blanket return to in-person work could lead to unintended consequences like lost talent and productivity. Mm-hmm. Does that, you want all state workers to come back to work with some exceptions by July 1st. Why is that not a concern?
Right, so 54% of people in the last Marquette poll said that they would support a policy requiring state workers to come back to work. So we're doing this bill in response to what the people have asked us to do. Now, my background dictates that I'm in no way opposed to telework. I did it for many, many years myself, internationally and across the nation. So I believe that certainly the ability to work remotely has been a major factor in, you know, growing our workforce and allowing us to be more flexible. I'm okay with it at the state level, but only when there are accountability measures in place. And what I heard from the agencies is that there aren't that many accountability measures in place. So the 2023 audit, one of the highlights of the audit was two things. Most of the agencies didn't have any idea of what extent their workforces were working remotely. Maybe they didn't know how many days a week they were in person or working remotely or where they were at any given time. I think that's improved somewhat. Also during the audit, we saw that when we're making telework agreements or putting people in remote working situations, that oftentimes and most of the time, concerns about security, cybersecurity, were not taken into account when making that decision. Now, I think that they have made some improvements in there, but it's been quite a long time, and we still have a lot of risk out there.
So is your bill pretty much asking for a reset?
The bill is basically saying, if the governor's not going to do this, come back and figure it out.
Come back and add that accountability.
Right.
You know, the fiscal estimates have been coming in for the bill. I saw DPI estimates more than $1 million increase in rental costs. DHS says their budget would increase by nearly $4 million if they were required to bring all of those workers back. How should the state weigh those costs with the potential of expanding telework?
Well, I think the question is, how would we pay for it? We've advanced now through the governor's 2030 report ideas for what to do with the state government's footprint, particularly in Madison, and moving government entities around into other office buildings, and that saved quite a bit of money. Bringing everyone back would cost us a bunch of money. So how are we going to pay for that? Especially in the context of what we've been talking about with federal cuts, when we're the next level of state government, people will be looking to us for solutions to Medicaid and education cuts at the federal level. So how do we fill in those holes while also having to now also pay for more office space? So I think the cost is a major concern of this. And there's also efficiencies that we've achieved because of remote work that would likely then cost additional dollars. And some of the fiscal estimates from our departments mention those and talk through those. But I think this is a large price tag and would be a large increase to the size of our state government and its footprint. It's something we have to be very careful
with. In that committee hearing, there was private sector testimony, and they said that after COVID, most of the private sector came back to the office, and that a lot of those workers are surprised that state employees are not back in the office. Is there a double standard in state government for who's expected to be back?
I don't think so. And we were hearing from some of the folks who testified that the private market, including Secretary Blumenfeld at DOA, who was very clear that she had worked in a remote setting. I worked in a remote setting 10 years before I was a member of the Assembly, and it has benefits. There are efficiencies that can be achieved, and we are falling behind from what I was hearing in the private sector. I also own a business, and I can't say that there's much about my business that is transferable to government other than treat your workers the way they want to be treated and be good to your customers. And I think those are sort of two main lessons, but otherwise there's not much we can learn from the private sector about what we do in a prison, for instance. So there are certainly some things to learn, but there are also lessons we have to learn from the past couple of years of being successful at the state level of running these remote work programs.
But how do you measure success? What I'm getting at with the remote work situation is we're measuring success by the fact that we've saved some space. We're measuring success by some workers have more work satisfaction in their jobs because they don't have to commute and, you know, maybe they have more autonomy. But we haven't measured productivity, and we haven't measured if it really is more efficient. They make claims that we've gained efficiencies, but where's the data that supports that? And as a senior financial analyst for many years and somebody who consulted in business intelligence, I'm looking for the evidence that supports we've made those gains. And if the evidence was there, we wouldn't be having this argument. But the agencies are only delivering to me performance evidence. They're saying at the supervisory level, they're checking in with people periodically, doing annual reviews, maybe putting those telework agreements in place. But how do you know the employee is using the most of their time to the best of their ability? And what I said in the committee hearing last week was, listen, state taxpayers don't just want to know that people are doing their jobs. They want to know that they're doing them well. And they're just saying that just enough is not enough. And that's not to say that there aren't some state employees who aren't super productive at home. I believe that most people probably are pretty productive at home. But we don't know because we haven't gone through that process.
How do you respond?
The audit report was very clear that there have been efficiencies achieved. And so if we're going to use the audit report for one reason, we have to look at it holistically as well. We have to look at that there have been benefits, and those are things that we should also take into consideration here. So you can't just cherry pick the things
but
that make sense for policy.
I don't disagree. I think there have been benefits. But at this point, I think that, you know, state taxpayers are asking us for some more accountability from the state, from the state's state workforce. And that's what we're looking to do, is highlight the situation and hope that, you know, the governor chooses to take some action so that we don't have to keep pushing this issue. We're looking at states like Minnesota next door, who not a Republican-led state.
It was like half time,
50% of the time, and certainly California is up to 4 days now.
Well, Governor
Which is
Evers,
not what the bill here would do. The bill here would say never, no working remotely
well,
at all.
Well, Governor Evers has already said that he is planning on vetoing any in-person work mandates for state employment. Why continue to push this bill? Is this something you think that Republicans could run on in 2 years
in
the Assembly?
No, especially not in 2 years. I mean, I think that we're going to get to a place culturally where there has to be a response to this issue. And one thing that this bill has done is bring forward the conversation and put it in the spotlight so we can have it. And it wasn't being had before. It's been 5 years and the conversation wasn't very public. So now it's public. Now we're listening to, you know, people from the state workforce, from the private sector, from within, you know, representation of other people, and saying, look, what do we need to do? I do not believe it is the role of the legislature to be prescriptive in this matter. We should not be trying to micromanage from the legislative branch of government. But we are saying, governor hasn't done anything to address this issue, so we're kind of pushing it
out
there.
The conversation still has value, even if this particular bill goes nowhere.
I believe it does.
So your committee also talked about this issue of cybersecurity, which I know is really important to you. Why is this an important issue to you about cybersecurity in state government?
Do you ever get a phone call when they say there's been a data breach on your bank account or your credit card? You know, do you ever get a call from an organization that says, oh, all of a sudden there's been a data breach? Have you seen when school districts have a data breach, how it can shut down their networks for 2 and 3 weeks at a time, and there can be, you know, cyber ransoms at play, and then we have to pay for insurances for those kinds of things? There's cost associated with it and risk. And we are looking at if we're not even monitoring when people are logging in or where they're logging in from, how do we know what layers of security we don't have and what we need to put in place? And what is the cost on that? So if we consider the cost of hybrid work, now I think it's great to be able to save some money on, you know, space savings and office management, but if you have hybrid where people are only in the office, you know, 3 days a week sometimes, 2 days a week sometimes, you still need an office space for them. So there's a cost to that. And then there's also a cost to providing the levels of security that they need offsite. So where is the upside and the downside in terms of cost for remote work? And I'm not saying it can't be managed. I'm saying we need to figure that out so that we're spending the taxpayer dollar to the best of its ability.
There was some testimony from DPI about cybersecurity. They talked about how they were having difficulty keeping up with IT and tech services, and therefore that schools sometimes were taking some pretty significant risks that, in the testifier's words, were frightening. Do you think the state needs to do more around cybersecurity, particularly for people who work from not an office?
Yeah, and we heard some testimony about how workers have to go through multi-factor authentication and that there are security measures in place, and I think those have been improved since the time of the audit, which was snapshot in time 2 years ago. And so, you know, I trust that our state government is doing what it can to stay safe, but this is a moving target, of course, and we have to stay on top of it. You know, we as legislators, we do our work from wherever we are. I'm confident that our legislative technology folks are on top of this and giving us the best advice and the best tools for us to be safe. I think that the departments and agencies of our state government can do the same for their workers, too.
I know a member of the committee, Vice Chair Representative Shea Shortwell, had sent out some letters to counties and local communities regarding diversity, equity, and inclusion efforts. Is that a important work of the committee? Will that be coming before the committee in a larger conversation?
When we had our informational hearing, I did make an announcement at the end of the hearing that if, you know, Representative Shortwell gathers enough information that substantiates work by the committee in terms of estimating what these costs are and trying to understand if there's a return on those investments, then we'll address it. But at this time, there isn't anything specific as they're still working to compile the data.
You haven't seen any of the information that's come in yet?
I've seen a little bit of it, but I think they're still working on getting responses.
I know that Democrats on the committee questioned that request for information about local communities' DEI efforts. Why is that a concern?
Well, number one, this struck us as the sort of whole committee effort has, as a copying and pasting Trump policy into state efforts. Same with remote work, same with the committee overall. And this is something that communities, at least in my district, I think around the state, have been doing at the request of voters. City of Madison was probably behind the requests of voters to be working using an equity lens in everything they do, which is what they do. And I think it would take an entire semi-truck, maybe a few, to fulfill a records request like this, because everything that they do is through a lens of equity. And that's what their voters were asking them to do. So, I think asking questions of those local governments is okay, but let's not put a burden on them when they're already struggling with funding not being enough from the state level. They're already struggling to keep up with the work of their constituents, and this is just adding to that. Overall, DEI has been a benefit to our communities. It's something that we ought to be proud of, that we're moving into an effort to bring more people into the fold. Bring
and taxpayer
more people
dollars
who are,
should pay for
exactly,
that.
Exactly. Taxpayer dollars should never once be involved in discriminating against people. And that's, sort of some of the realms that state government and local governments were into. And I think we should be pushing them into a place where they are not discriminating. And if we can use this data, if we get it, sure. If we can use this data to be something that stamps out discrimination where it's happening, great. Maybe we'll see that there are some DEI programs that are working better than others and there's lessons to be learned, sure. But I think the method and the ways in which we go about asking data, not overburdening our local governments, is important, because they have hard work to do that they're struggling to do already.
Looking forward. What are some other topics that you anticipate that the committee will be tackling? Artificial intelligence? Is there any other efficiencies or areas of inefficiency that you see the committee looking into?
I have quite a few on my list, but one I wanted to talk to you all about today was school districts. We have 421 school districts in this state, and in some cases we have five or six really large school districts that have a really big administrative burden, and then we have, like in my district, in District 32, we have multiple single school districts that feed into single school district high schools. And how can we gain efficiencies in that structure? So we have multiple administrations at every school, multiple business managers, multiple communications managers, and we are already seeing at the local level these schools trying to partner with each other to maybe share some services on their own. So the market is pushing them to do that. And we are looking at, is there a possibility where, we can explore through this committee or maybe outside this committee, but we're all hearing about school funding. How can we incentivize maybe some sharing of services or voluntary consolidation where we can address the inflationary costs and things like fixed costs and wages, where maybe you are sharing personnel in some cases. And then maybe in the bigger school districts, where can we provide relief in breaking up some of those administrations or providing some guidelines? I think voluntary is the key here, but what can we do to work together with the school districts around the state to understand how state government can support their efficiency efforts?
So that's maybe a big topic that you hope that the committee could tackle. Do you think there could be efficiencies there? Do you think you can find some bipartisan agreement?
Well, I think initial reaction is it sounds like some more of the same as the committee has been on. Remote work is seems to me an attack on workers, which has been part of the Republican playbook for years now. Privatizing our public schools has been part of the playbook. And if this fits into that, I'll be deeply skeptical and wanting to figure out what are the things we can do that are efficiencies, yes, but not the things that would result in cuts to our public schools or make their job harder than it already is. So we just have to be very careful that this is something that has a new intent, that has a new goal in mind, and isn't going to be doing more of the same that we've been seeing.
I think it's a fiscal intent. It's basically saying how do we provide the same services without duplicating the spending.
It's not about privatizing.
It is not about privatizing. This is very different from your district. My district has, I think, 9 K-8 schools that are single school districts, and then 2 high schools that are single school districts. And I've seen this pattern throughout the state, and more in rural areas and districts that are outside of the urban areas. And they're already looking for these opportunities. So I think that committees like ours can find ways to incentivize those voluntarily. And I said voluntarily was the key, because there are pluses and minuses to doing those kinds of things. And how does it impact the taxpayers in those districts? And how does it impact the services the schools are able to provide? But oftentimes in rural areas, there aren't enough special ed providers, whether it's providing services or classroom teaching. There aren't enough people to provide mental health services in every school in the area. If they were able to share those services and those personnel, they might realize a lot more efficiencies. And there are ways to do that already that are legal and allowable under statute, but I'd like to see us take the opportunity to say, how can we support those efforts at the state level? And I think that's something we're hearing from Democrat and Republican districts alike, that there's a struggle in terms of the funding. And we would all love to see the state funding formula overhauled at some point. But until we get there, what can we do to step forward along the way?
All right. That will be the final word. So thank you both for being here talking about the committee. We will continue to watch your work.
Thank
you for having us.
And thank you to the viewers of Newsmakers. Be sure to tune in again as we highlight the issues and sit down with the decision makers who make a difference for all of us.
Nicolet Bank is honored to support all who strive to make communities great. You have been watching a production of Wisconsin Eye, your unfiltered window into legislative deliberations and public policy programming, where our mission is to provide Wisconsinites an opportunity to access the legislative process and connect with conversations that inform our citizenry. Please consider supporting our mission, and thank you for watching. Wisconsin Eye, policy made public.